Good morning, everybody. I think you all have the outline of this discourse called Kalama Sutta. This is one sutta that almost all Buddhist Theravada and Mahayana know or supposed to know. It has come in many different versions because it is one of the most popular discourses of the Buddha. It is also at the same time quoted in various places by various people for various reasons. Not particularly for the reason that are mentioned in the sutta itself, but for their own personal reasons. And mostly for some ulterior motive, they use this discourse as an excuse. For instance, if somebody does not want to go to a temple, does not want to observe the precepts, does not want to meditate, they always quote this sutta and said, even the Buddha said, don't believe in anything. So we don't have to believe in dana, sila, bhavana, meditation, nothing we don't have to believe. Because Buddha said that. Where? In Kalama Sutta. So let us see what Buddha said in the Kalama Sutta. You know the story that it was a tradition in the time of the Buddha that various ascetics and mendicants and religious people passed their time assembling in certain places and wandering and meeting and discussing various issues, religious as well as philosophical, sometimes maybe social issues. Now, the Kesaputta is an area where people called Kalamas lived. And because of various people came to their assembly hall, those days they had a very big public gathering hall, like a community hall for people to gather, perhaps to spend the time there, spend the night, or sometimes when they meet to discuss various current issues. And in Kesaputta village also there was such a assembly hall, and various religious teachers came, and whenever new teacher came, people gathered around him, and he would present his own religious tradition. And each person, of course, was praising one's own religion and despising others. And people really were very much confused about this different presentation and praising one's own belief and despising others. They were really confused. Then they heard that the Buddha also went to that village. And before he went, his reputation went before him. And as soon as he went there, people had already gathered. And when Buddha sat down, then they presented their confusion. Maybe one of the leaders that they appointed to represent all of them told the Buddha, Venerable Sir, teachers in previous teachers expressed their so this man went and greeted the Buddha and according to the discourse, some paid respect to him by folding their palms and sat down. Some exchanged friendly greetings and sat down. And some simply by standing folded their palms without bending down, depending on their arrogance, they just sat down. And some announced their names and just calmly sat down. And some just sat down without any folding palms and so forth. Various ways they behaved in front of the Buddha. This is the very standard presentation. You can read in Digha Nikaya, there is another discourse called Atanatya Sutta, where even the various type of demons went to see the Buddha and said, Appekacche bhagavata saddhin sammodhin su appekacche bhagavata saddhin sammodhita anjalin panametva ekamantan nisiyodhin su appekacche namugottam savetva ekamantan nisiyodhin su, and so forth. Just various ways they greeted the Buddha and sat down. And when these Kalama sat down, their leader said to the Buddha, "Venerable sir, some recluses and Brahmins came to our village and expressed their own views. They insulted, used abusive words, scolded and criticized others' views. They said their views were right views, all other views were wrong. Then came another group of recluses and Brahmins to Kalamas, to Kesaputta, and did the same thing. Venerable sir, we are confused and full of doubt as to which good recluse tell the truth and which one tells the falsehood, untruth. And Buddha, you know, this is a wonderful thing in the Buddha's approach. He did not criticize any of them. It's a wonderful thing. Instead of criticizing them, Buddha simply said, "Kalamas, you are rightly doubting and hesitating. When you have doubt and hesitation, you are confused." He simply directly addressed the issue rather than criticizing anybody. Then Buddha said, "Kalamas, you yourself should know these things are wholesome, these things are unwholesome, these thoughts are blamed by the wise, these thoughts are undertaken and accomplished not for welfare. They end up in displeasure. Kalamas, then you should give them up." So he gave them to be the judges. He did not want to judge. He said, "You judge yourself on the basis of the results. If certain things are harmful, not beneficial, avoid them." And then Buddha asked this question, "Kalamas, is the greed arisen in a person beneficial to him or not?" He did not refer to any particular person. He used a third person. And he did not say, "Did you ask those ascetic or recluses when they were greedy, whether they were happy or not?" He did not ask them to ask that question. He said, using the third person, he said, when greed arises, is it beneficial or not, harmful or not? So naturally they asked from their own experience. Buddha, as you know, in Socrates' philosophy, Socrates said that teaching the truth is like a job of a midwife. Midwife doesn't create babies. She just goes there and help the mother to deliver the baby. Baby is in the mother's womb. Similarly, the truth comes from their own experience. So Buddha helped them to bring the truth out. So these people said, Venerable Sir, it is not beneficial to him. They speak from their own experience. Kalamas, does a man obsessed with greed deprive life of others, take what is not given, commit sensual misconduct, tell lies, and encourage others to do so? Does it cause him to commit unpleasantness for a long period of time? They said, yes. Yes, Venerable Sir. Kalamas, is the greed arisen in a person beneficial to him? The same thing, same question he asked again. So the Kalamas said, Kalamas. Then the Buddha said, Kalamas, does a man obsessed with hatred? He repeated the same question. Then their answer was, yes, it is harmful for them for a long period of time. Then Buddha asked Kalamas, does a man obsessed with delusion deprive life of others, and so forth? The same thing he repeated. And their answer again was, yes, Venerable Sir. Then Buddha said, Kalamas, are these thoughts wholesome or unwholesome? This is the criterion we have to use. When Buddha came to this point, they have already expressed that they are harmful. Greed is harmful, hatred is harmful, delusion is harmful. They already have answered the question. Then Buddha said, Kalamas, these thoughts are wholesome or unwholesome? Buddha did not use the word wholesome or unwholesome. He simply asked them whether they are harmful or not. That means that which is harmful is not wholesome. That which is not harmful is wholesome. So Buddha asked, are these thoughts wholesome or unwholesome? Unwholesome, Venerable Sir. Why unwholesome? Because they are harmful. Harmfulness is the result. Wholesome, unwholesome is the cause. Now he showed them causal relationship between these two. Teaching the dependent origination in a very simple way for any ordinary person to understand. Then again Buddha asked, are they right thoughts or wrong thoughts? Wrong thoughts, Venerable Sir. Why wrong? Because they are harmful. Are they blamed or praised by the wise? Venerable Sir, they are blamed by the wise. Why they are blamed? Because they are harmful. Harmful to themselves, harmful to others. Therefore, the wise persons will blame them. And then, with this, at this point, Buddha gave them this advice. This is a very beautiful advice. I think it is very good for us to remember them, all these 10 points. Either in Pali or in English. Whenever we talk about Kalama Sutta, these 10 points we must remember either in Pali or in English. In Pali, revelation, anusava. Buddha said, do not accept anything through revelations. We will explain these things in detail. First, this is the Buddha's way of teaching. First, as I mentioned yesterday, the style of sutta, the scheme of sutta. First, he gives the introduction. Then he gives the summary and then explain. Now, this is the summary. First he gave the introduction, then he gave the summary. In the summary he said, do not believe anything through revelations. Secondly, he said, do not believe anything through tradition, handed down from the past. Third, so that is the second in Pali is called parampara. Parampara. Third is, do not believe anything through mere hearsay. That is called itikiraya. Fourth, do not believe in anything because it accords with the scriptures. Pitaka Sampadaya. Pitaka Sampadaya. Fifth is, do not believe in anything through logic. That is Thakka Hetu. Sixth, do not accept anything because it is a good point of view, Naya Hetu. Then the next is, do not believe anything through having considered reasoning. That is Akara Parivitakka. Akara Parivitakka. Next is, do not accept anything because one is convinced of some theory. Ditti Nijjana Khanti. We will explain all these things in detail later on. Do not accept anything through the testimony of some recluse, reliable persons. Bhavya Rupataya. And do not believe in anything because this thinking that this person is respected teacher, that is Samano no Guru. And do not believe in anything because it is in the scriptures. That is called Pitaka Sampadaya. Now, these 10 points we put into two categories. The one category is, or one group is from number, let me read it only in English so that you can form the group easily. First is, do not accept anything through revelation, do not accept anything through traditions, do not accept anything through hearsay, do not accept anything because it accords with the scriptures, do not accept anything through logic, do not accept because it is point of view, do not accept anything through having considered reasoning, do not accept anything because one is convinced of some theory, do not accept anything through the testimony of some reliable person, and do not accept anything thinking that this person is a respectable person. Now, number 1 to 4 is one group, number 9 to 10 is another group, and number 5 to 8 is another group. Actually, altogether there are only two groups. That means number 1 to 4 and number 9 to 10 are based on faith. What are the number 1 to 4? Believing in revelation, believing in traditions, believing in mere hearsay, and believing in the scriptures. These are the four. And the other two are believing in something because depending on the reliability of the person, appearance, and the number 10 is this person is respectable person. And these 6 points are based on belief. And the remaining 4 based on reasons, or based on intellect. Now, Buddha asked Kalamas not to base their reliability acceptance based on mere faith or based on mere reasons. Why is that? His teaching should be accepted either based on faith. I mean, normally, religious traditions are presented and accepted either based on faith or based on reason. Buddha said, don't accept anything because of the faith or just because of the reasons. We will see later on why he said this. You know, most religions say, believe, 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 believe. They just, you know, harp on belief, emphasized on belief. Others say, no, this is a very rational religion, and therefore we must accept it. Buddha denied both. Not just mere faith, not just mere belief, what they call reasons. And Buddha said this dhamma is atakkavachara. Atakkavachara means you cannot understand dhamma through logics. We give examples later on why he asked us not to accept anything through logics. And also he said don't accept anything only on mere faith. We will come across examples on this too. Now let us go, take each of them one by one and try to understand in some detail. Let us take number one. There is another discourse related to this in Majjhima Nikaya called Chanki Sutta. Chanki Sutta, you may refer to that sutta if you like. You find it in Majjhima Nikaya. Another sutta is called Sandaka Sutta. That also you can find in Majjhima Nikaya. Okay. Revelations. He said, don't believe, don't accept anything through because of the revelation. When Chanki had a discussion with the Buddha, in his defense, he said, Venerable Gautama, this is how it has come down in our tradition. Then Buddha said, Bharadvaja, there are five things that may turn out into two different ways here and now. What five? Faith, approval, oral tradition, recent cogitation and reflection, reflective acceptance of a view. These five things may turn out in two different ways, here and now. What are the two different ways? What are the five things? Five things are faith, approval, oral tradition, recent cogitation, and reflective acceptance. These are the five things. And these five things can turn out to be in two ways. What are the two ways? Now somebody may be fully accepted, or something may be fully accepted out of faith, and yet it may be empty, hollow, and false. That is one. Something else may not be fully accepted out of faith, yet it may be factual, true, and unmistaken. You see, you have faith, belief, accepted things through oral traditions, and your reasoning and reflective acceptance, and they may turn out to be false, empty. Something may not have been accepted because of faith, approval, oral tradition, recent cogitation, and reflective acceptance may turn out to be true. It is not accepted based on these things, but it may turn out to be true. So, if somebody says that this is my true belief, this is my tradition, this is my reasoning, this is my logic, and therefore, I think this is true. To that extent, the person tells the truth. If the person says, this is my belief, this is my opinion, this is our tradition, this is my reasoning, and because of this reasoning, these traditions, these views, these opinions, I believe this to be true. And if, to that extent, the person tells the truth. If somebody says, this is my belief, this is the tradition, this is these are the reasons, this is my views, and therefore this must be the only truth, everything else is wrong, that person does not tell the truth. You can see the difference? One is, let me take one of them to make it easy. Suppose somebody says, this is my belief. And I believe in that. And the person to that action tells the truth, that the person only tells his own belief. That's all right. Because he's entitled to have his belief. But if he says, this is my belief and this is the only truth, everything else is wrong, that person does not tell the truth because that person does not represent all beliefs in the world. That person represents only his own belief. And he cannot make a general statement about all other beliefs. Similarly, this is my views, this is my opinion, this is my traditions and so forth. For all these things, he can say, this is my tradition, I believe in that. To that extent, he tells the truth. If he says, this is my tradition, this is the only true tradition, all other traditions are wrong, then he does not tell the truth because he has no right to represent all the traditions in the world. He even does not know all the traditions. Similarly, he cannot say, this is my view. To that extent, he tells the truth. If he says, this is my view, and this is the only truth, everything else is wrong, he is not telling the truth. Because he cannot represent the views of the whole universe. He can represent his own views, and so forth. So, Buddha said, therefore, believing in something depending on tradition is one thing, and revelation and accepting accepting that particular thing is one thing, is but the truth is something different. And then the next point is tradition handed down from past, that is called parampara. You know, when we bring down a tradition, there can be many situations, many possibilities, occasions for interpolation, inserting something into the tradition. And we bring the whole thing as one true, unbroken tradition. And yet, because the tradition is something that has come down from generation after generation after generation, handed down to generations, one generation to the next and so forth. And during this transmission, during this transferring time, something else can come into that tradition. That is why the Buddha taught the Dhamma in a most untraditional way. He did not follow the tradition. That is why his teaching is called Patisotagami, going against the tradition, going against the current. He was not following the tradition. You remember when Buddha went to Kapilavastu for the first time and went out with his alms bowl, collecting food. King Suddhodana came out to the street and said, what are you doing? You are begging? You are my son. We have everything in the palace. Then Buddha said, this is our habit. This is our tradition. Your tradition? Your tradition is a royal tradition. Have you ever heard any king going out begging? Then Buddha said, sir, that is your tradition, not the Buddha's tradition. So he broke away from that tradition.
king's tradition, royal tradition.
In his time, believing in creator is a tradition. Buddha broke away from that tradition. Believing in a permanent eternal soul or self was a tradition. He broke away from that tradition. Believing in caste system, they believed that Brahma created four castes, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Shudra, Vaishya and so forth. He broke away from that tradition. He said, this is silly, senseless. And in his time, women were trodden down, women were treated like dirt. Buddha broke away from that tradition. He said, no, women should be treated equally as men. Like that, he went on breaking down, crumbling, destroying all traditions. And advised his disciples, you follow the tradition of Dhamma. That nobody can change. In Mahaparinibbana Sutta, sometimes when we say this, sometimes a question can arise. People ask, how about in Mahaparinibbana Sutta, Buddha said, there are what you call seven invincible factors. They are called Satta Aparihaniya Dhamma. Satta Aparihaniya Dhamma. That means seven invincible Dhammas. If you follow these Dhammas, you will not be defeated. And he taught these seven invincible Dhamma first to Lichchavis. When Vasakarya Magadha, Prime Minister of King Ajatasattu, went to the Buddha and asked how to defeat Lichchavis, Buddha said, so long as Lichchavis do not break the rules and regulations that have been established already, nobody can defeat them. And similar things, he gave many such discourses in the same sutta to bhikkhus. And there he mentioned this, among many things. He said, as long as they do not authorize what has not been authorized already, and do not abolish what has been authorized, but proceed according to what has been authorized by the rules of training, they may be expected to prosper and not decline. This refers to tradition. Now, therefore, somebody can ask Buddha mentioned to Kalamas not to follow tradition, but he followed tradition. That's called Sanatana Dhamma, ancient tradition. What is this tradition Buddha followed? Tradition of Dhamma. That is indisputable. And that is what he wanted us to follow. Not the tradition that somebody introduced arbitrarily according to that person's own whims and fancies, but the tradition of Dhamma is not introduced by somebody. Tradition of Dhamma is there always. So the difference, we have to understand the difference between this statement and the Vedic traditional teaching. Difference between this statement and belief in Vedic tradition is very clear. Here, the training rules are well established.
After considerable deliberation and experiments to maintain the harmony of the Sangha, to make it easy for the modest monks and to nuns to live with ease, to lead their lives in right direction, and to attain liberation from suffering. Here there is a proper procedure in dealing with wrongdoing and appropriate remedies to reinstate offenders or to expel from the order. Now, this is the tradition that maintains a sound, harmonious community. And Buddha gave many discourses in some other places. When the community is not harmonious, if the teaching is not sound teaching, then after the demise of the leader, the community will break down. And there will be chaos, no harmony. This is not a matter of belief, but abiding by the training rules of discipline. There is a democratic procedure that every member of the Sangha, that refers to the Buddhist community of Sangha, monks and nuns, every member of the Sangha must follow. This is an organizational matter of the Sangha. This is Vinaya that helps them to follow the Dhamma that teaches to attain liberation. In a belief system, there is no democratic system to follow to make a decision. When you believe, you don't need any system. You just believe. And that is why it can crumble down. But if there is a system to hold things together, and if you believe in that system and you see from your own experience when one rule is broken, then everything will crumble. And therefore that is the system that Buddha asked his disciples to follow. You believe in anything you like. It is not a question of right or wrong, but the question of surrendering to the will of an unknown, unknowing being who considers to have given Vedic mantras. This is the tradition that the Buddha denied. That means they utter certain things and think that that is the truth and insist others to accept it and believe it. And that is the tradition Buddha denied. And the third point is itikiraya, mere hearsay, as you know, is a common sense thing. When you believe in something because you have heard it from somebody, from the third, fourth, fifth, sixth person, then when it comes down to you, it would be completely, totally distorted. And that is the reason why Buddha asked us not to believe in mere hearsay. He said in Sutta Nipata, I will teach you a Dhamma, not hearsay, but to be directly seen. Whoever discovers it and knows it and lives by it with mindfulness will transcend craving for the world. and that is something time tested. When you put it into practice, you can see the results. And therefore, that is the type of teaching Buddha taught. Hearsay is not necessarily something ancient. Sometimes people travel all over the world, believing what they have already heard by word of mouth, only to be utterly disappointed when they arrive at a place, what they have heard may be totally false or baseless, mere rumor. Sometimes mere hearsay can also lead to destructions, great calamity, and therefore mere hearsay is dangerous. One example that in the Invincible Dhammas, when the Buddha taught to Magadha Prime Minister, who came to seek Buddha's advice, he said, Lichavis cannot be defeated so long as they observe the rules and regulations that have been introduced to maintain their harmony. So long as they don't break them, nobody can defeat them. Then this man went, and he's a very cunning man, he went and devised a method to create disharmony among the Lichavis. He became friendly with them and got one among all these people. When they were all together in a meeting, he got one out of the meeting, whispered something to his ears. When this person came back, when he went away with this Magadha Prime Minister, they suspected, why did he go with him? And they also noticed this Prime Minister whispering something to his ears. And they were very curious to know what he whispered to his ears. When he came back, he asked, what did he tell you? He said, nothing. He just said there is a seed inside a paddy. What? There's a rice seed inside paddy? What a big deal. It's a very normal thing. Somebody doesn't have to whisper it to your ears. When you open the paddy grain, inside you can see rice. It's a very common sense thing. No, you are telling a lie. And he went and whispered similar things to another person. Something different. Also very silly thing. It's totally silly. But when others ask him what he did tell you, he would tell the same thing. Then they all believe. They heard from the second person, third person, fourth person, and so forth. Finally, they began to suspect each other and broke their unity. Nobody directly listened to this man. They heard what the others told them. For example, when he took the first man and whispered it to him, the other people would have asked him, what did you whisper to his ears? And then when the person who heard it came and reported, if he said the same thing that this person said, then they both match. Then there will not be any doubt. But he did not let them do that. And these people came and reported to others what they have heard. And then finally there was a disunity, harmony disappeared. And they began to quarrel. then it was very easy for Ajatasattu to fight and defeat them in a battle. We don't have to go to history. We all know it even today. When you hear something from the third, fourth, fifth person, you will hear something totally different from the original story. That is why Buddha asked us not to believe in mere hearsay. I tell you my own experience. I mean, you might have had thousands of such experiences in your life. When I was, when I went to Malaysia one day, somebody said, "Bhante, there is a woman who has taken 7 frogs from a man's stomach. 7 frogs without operating." I said, "What?" "Yes. This woman is in such and such a place, come and see." So he and I went. We went, we walked, and finally we saw many cars parked on the road. And we went to the house, and this woman, a Chinese woman, gave 2 chairs for us to sit down. When we sat down, many people were there, lined up to see her, and she had a big stack of eggs. She was speaking some English with us, talked to us in English. She was talking with us, and a man would come and say, "I have a pain here." Okay, she would take an egg while talking with us. She would rub that egg on that particular spot where this man had the pain and break the egg, nothing. And then she would take another egg while talking with us. No mantram, no charm, nothing. Just, you know, as casually she was talking with us and broke the egg and broke another egg. After about breaking 10, 15 eggs, one egg may have a little white sort of clotted. Then she said, "Here you are. You have what you call calcium deposit. That is why you have, I removed it. This calcium was in your, in that, on that part of the body. I removed it. Now you go home. You will be okay." This man would pay her something and go. Another man comes and says, "I have pain here." So he would do the same thing and say, "Do you have a blood clot in your heart?" Because when you break several eggs, some eggs in the embryo, there's a little blood. She showed to him, "See, blood here. I removed it. You had a blood clot. I removed. Here is. Here is the blood. You'll be all right. Go home." This is what she was doing. And the story spread around saying that she removed 7 frogs from a man's stomach. You know, this is the kind of things we hear when stories keep spreading around. Finally it comes to that state. So Buddha said, don't believe in mere hearsay. Then number 4, because it accords with the scriptures, Pitaka Sampradaya, this is the most abused, misinterpreted statement, point, that most Buddhist people use. Pitaka Sampradaya, Buddha said, it is said, don't believe in anything because it accords with the scriptures. Since the word Pitaka is used, they think Pitaka means Tipitaka. Friends, word Tipitaka was not even in existence in the time of the Buddha. Even the word Tipitaka came after the Third Council, 300 years after the Buddha's passing away. And Buddha's time there was no Tipitaka. And therefore Buddha was not referring to his own teaching. People say, using this, they say, Buddha asks us not to believe in even what he taught, that you find in Tipitaka. What we find in the Tipitaka is what Buddha taught. And therefore they say, don't believe, Buddha asks us not to believe in anything that is, that even he has taught, which you find in Tipitaka. You know, your common sense can ask him a question. If he did not want us to believe in anything he taught, why did he spend 45 years spending only 2 hours a day to sleep? 22 hours he went on teaching. As I mentioned, it's 17,670 sutras delivered. 17,600 sermons he delivered. If he did not want us to believe in anything, why did he waste his time? So, on the one hand, the word Tipitaka did not exist in the time of the Buddha. On the other hand, he did not ask us not to believe in anything he taught. Here, scriptures, Pitaka, is not the Pali Tipitaka. The word Pitaka is used any collection of teaching. The classification of Tipitaka came on only after the Buddha passed away, just 200 years before Jesus Christ. What he referred to was Vedic literature, Vedic collection. Even the word literature we used for written material. In his time there were no written material. So, he referred to Vedic teaching. And Vedic teaching, it is called Veda, as you know, that which is known is called Veda. It comes from the root vid, to know. Vid, this root comes, from this root two words are derived. One is called Veda, vid, from vid, vid is the root, from this root. One word derives, that is called Veda, that which is known. And the other word deriving from the same root is with to feel, Vedana. Vedana comes from the same root as with. So, first word Veda deriving from this root with is called Veda, because that is what is known to special type of people who meditated. That is very much like revelation. You know, somebody goes to a desert in the Middle East and sat in the very scorching sun and comes out and say, something was revealed to me. And he would teach people. Similarly, in India, those days, mendicants, ascetics, sramanas, brahmins were in meditation, and something happened to them, and they came to know certain things, which they taught his disciples. And that collection is called Veda, that which was known to them. And this can be speculation. There is no particular system for somebody to follow. You just believe in it. And out of trust, faith, belief, devotion, you accept it. And Buddha said, that we should not accept because of that collection. That is what is called Veda. That is what is called Pitaka, Pitaka Sampradaya, the collection of those things. And the other thing he did not, he asked us not to believe, is testimony of some reliable person, Bhavya Rupataya. Somebody appears to be very holy, noble, pure, clean. Appears to be so. But appearance is deceptive. Somebody can put up a very beautiful facade. Appearance. In private, inside, there'd be a lot of things which are totally, completely different from what he puts out.
Just like the politics.
Eh?
Just like the politics.
Politics. Yeah. And actually some religious persons could be good politicians. And they are presentation is so convincing, and they say, if you don't give $1 million, God will kill me. Give me $1 million. So these, you know, naive, gullible people keep pouring money.
That just happened recently in a Christian tradition.
Yeah.
He said he was going to die.
Yeah. You want me to die?
Yes. Yeah. You don't want me to die.
Yeah. So give the money.
Yeah. And he did.
Yeah.
And he didn't die.
He didn't die because you gave money.
Yeah. It worked.
And I called them gullible. I gave the meaning of the word gullible many times. If you have not heard the meaning of gullible, I tell you the meaning. The word gullible comes from the Pali word. Beautiful Pali word. It has a meaning. Gali means swallow. Baliso means bait. Gali baliso means swallowing the bait.
Swallowing.
Bait.
Swallow.
Swallow. Swallowing the bait. Gali baliso. In English, gullible. Gali, G-A-L-I. B-A-L-I-S-O. Baliso. I before, after L, second L, is long. Gali baliso. Baliso, in Sinhalese also we call it Billy. In Sinhalese we call Billy. Billy Banawa, Billy Pitta, and so forth, because most of the Sinhalese were derived from Pali. So, gali baliso has become gullible. You swallow the bait. And this is the bait that they gave you. If you don't give me $1 million, I will die. So you swallow it and give $1 million.
The funny part is that it was believed because he didn't die.
Right. Yeah.
Perfect.
It is just like somebody gave me a casket and said, Bhante, in this casket, there is a Buddha's relics. Buddha's relics. But don't open the casket. If you open it, relics will disappear.
<That's how wonderful>.
So, you know, it's a very big trick. But anyway, I opened it, there was nothing. So if I open, relics disappeared. like that?
Magic.
Magic.
Magic. Isn't it like that in the temple of the tooth, where you can't actually see the tooth, but everyone says that it's there? Can you not see the tooth at the temple of the tooth?
Uh-huh.
But people still say it's there?
Oh, the tooth.
The tooth relic of the Buddha?
Dantadhatu.
Nobody has seen it because it is in a case. I don't know if somebody opened it, whether it is still there. We don't know. But we all believe that the Buddha's relic tooth is there. Anyway, friends, we don't have time to have a break, so let me go through one more point and stop. Child has so much affection, respect for the mother. And therefore child says, my mother didn't say that, my mother said such and such. That is the kind of things Buddha said not to believe. The teacher, that is why I say in our presentation, we don't quote teachers. We don't quote teachers. We quote the Buddha and the Buddha's own teaching that we find in the text and which you always can go back and you refer to that. When the teacher dies or when you ask the teacher where did you get the information, teacher cannot send you to the original source. Teacher may make up all sort of things in his own mind and present to you. These teachers are not as good as the Buddha. And therefore, no matter how trustworthy a teacher is, how honest, noble, serene, supreme, enlightened the teacher is, we don't quote the teachers. Exactly as the Buddha said, he said, don't accept anything purely because the teacher is my teacher. You may have respect, affection, trust in your teacher. It's all right. But the real teacher must present the Buddha's teaching. Teacher is just an agent, not the inventor. Sometimes teachers are very smart, good speakers, and they can present things in many beautiful ways. But when you go and refer to the text, you find something totally different in the text. And therefore, in order to maintain the Dhamma in its own pure way, we got to go to the source, the Dhamma, not the teachers. And the remaining four points, in fact, I arrange them in this way. First, to present the first 6 points, which are based on faith. Up to now, I presented things that people believe based on faith. Now, the next part of the discourse are only 4 points, which are based on reasons. So, I will spend some time this afternoon to finish it up, I hope, and then we go to the next. But we have no time for long break. If you have one or two questions, and if you are not tired, not sleepy, you can ask those few questions. Yes.
This anu sava is anu means along with and sava there means what?
Listening. Sava savaka.
Anusava.
Anusava, listening as you hear.
Listening as you hear.
Yeah. That is the while somebody is saying, you listen.
When they're talking about their liberation.
Right. And you retain, Yeah, you retain it in your mind and repeat to somebody, and the other person very attentively listen as you are saying and remember. That is how that tradition continues.
But then can you explain how a fifth part would be in accordance with the Kalama Sutta or not?
I think that also is a very good point. In Buddha's teaching, there are two individuals. One is called faith follower and the other is called Dhamma follower. Faith follower is one who listens to Dhamma and follows the Dhamma, practices the Dhamma and see the results and then begin to follow that results on the trust that the person got from his own experience. That means the first person has to gain experience, and based on that experience, person will establish in faith. And such a person is called faith follower. Faith follower does not mean that that person simply has faith on based on appearance and so forth and so on. First has to know the results. You may remember the stories of Visakha, Rattapala, Upali, Supabuddha and so forth. They first listened to Dhamma. And then, when they were listening to Dhamma, this is the very beautiful thing when for faith follower, they internalize the Dhamma. Say Buddha said in Kalama Sutta, first he said, he asked the Kalamas, is greed harmful or beneficial? As he was asking the question, they reflected and saw what the greed has done to them. From their experience they knew the greed was not beneficial. From that experience, they said, yes. Then he asked, is hatred harmful or beneficial? Then from the experience, they know that it is harmful. They said, it is harmful. Is delusion harmful or beneficial? From the experience, they knew that. Then the Buddha asked, when somebody is obsessed with greed, does that person hurt somebody, kill somebody, lies to somebody, and so forth? Or does that person always tell the truth and do something beneficial to others? They said, no. The one obsessed with greed can tell lies, cheat, hurt, and so forth and so on, because the mind is already obsessed by greed. Similar thing he asked about the hatred and delusion. And he asked the other side of the non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion. So the Buddha gave us a chance to look into our own state of mind from our own experience to come up with an answer. And then they believed, see, this is true. He was telling the truth. And then have trust, faith. Yes.
One day, for instance, now Anathapindika, long before he had heard the sermons, he had faith in the Buddha. And as soon as he heard the word Buddha, he knew that he had faith, and then he followed.
You know, Anathapindika heard the qualities of the Buddha, qualities of the Dhamma, qualities of the Sangha. And when you hear the quality, he did not have anything to discredit the qualities. When they said Buddha spoke the truth, Buddha taught the Dhamma, Adi Kalyana, Majje Kalyana, Pariyosana Kalyana, for example, one example. Anathapindika heard that. The beginning is excellent, middle is excellent, end is excellent. When you hear even these three statements, you believe that this person may be telling something very meaningful, and then begin to develop faith. And all other nine qualities of the Buddha, six qualities of the Dhamma, and the nine qualities of the Sangha, and so forth, Sudatta or the Anathapindika heard this. And then he established faith in the Buddha. Okay. If you don't have any, you have a question?
Yes, I do.
What is that?
The term that you mentioned in Pali, against the current. Could you give the Pali?
Which word?
You said that he taught against the current, the Buddha.
Patisotagami. Huh? Patisotagami. Going against the current. Patisotagami. Going against the current. Okay?